Good afternoon, this is your host, Michael J. Long, host of Michael's Libertarian Pizza Party. And thank you for joining me on this fine Saturday afternoon. Actually, it's still morning, it's 11:40 a.m., but thank you for joining me, I truly and sincerely appreciate it. And if you're interested in following me, looking me up, the show's YouTube channel would be www.youtube.com/c/Michael's Libertarian Pizza Party, so you can go on there and look at any, and of course I encourage you to click the notification bell, select all, and subscribe, and then that way you will be notified of any future video content and live streams that I do. So again, hit that subscription link, click the notification bell, and then select all. And, you know, again, that way you can be notified for any future video content and live streams that I do. I know I've repeated that, but I'm sorry. Anyways, I think my prior URL for this podcast show was anchor.fm/MichaelJLong. And I don't believe that's inoperable anymore. I think that's probably inoperable because it's been a little bit of a change with Anchor. It's now Spotify Podcast. Or podcasters for Spotify, or Spotify podcasters for whatever. So I don't know. I mean, I'll have to look up the URL and provide that. In the meantime, for those that know me, know I'm a libertarian, right? I'm a minarchist libertarian, or at least that's how I describe myself, right? So, you know, of course, I do believe that there's a role for government, but that role should be extremely limited, very limited, to protecting the rights of the individuals. Rights as in our gun rights and, you know, our First Amendment rights and all of our other rights that are enshrined, regardless of whether they are enshrined in the U.S., explicitly mentioned in the U.S. Constitution or not. And that's a tricky one because, you know, you have the Ninth Amendment that basically lays it out that says, look, if whatever rights that are not explicitly mentioned in the U.S. Constitution does not mean that it's not a right, does not mean that it's not a right, and doesn't mean that it shall not be protected, and that all rights shall be protected. And then you have the 10th Amendment, which, or at least it's how I would paraphrase it, but then you have the 10th Amendment, which says that the powers not delegated to the U.S. Constitution shall be left to the states or to the individuals. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, then you have the 14th Amendment, which binds out of the U.S. Constitution with all the states and the local governments, county governments, and out of the federal government. So, you know, there's multiple people could misinterpret that or interpret it. However, so that leads to a lot of uncertainty because there isn't any cut and dry answer to it. However, I would probably describe it as, look, you know, if we're dealing with abortion rights here, if we're dealing with any right that isn't mentioned in the U.S. Constitution, it doesn't mean that it's not a right. It should still be protected as long as your rights are not being usurped, that the states, whatever powers the federal government doesn't have that isn't mentioned in the Constitution, the states can govern and manage and all that. So I think my interpretation of it would be that, you know, as long as they're not violating any of anybody's individual rights, that they can pretty much govern their states or the local governments, county governments, the municipalities or what have you, however they want. But as long as they are protecting your individual rights that are enshrined, regardless of whether it's explicitly mentioned in the Constitution or not. Some people might interpret it differently and might say, well, if it's not in the Constitution, then it's not something that the states are obligated to protecting. That's not my interpretation. But you know, you have 1,000 different interpretations, but my interpretations, again, I've mentioned it. So, you know, but I think everybody that knows me knows that I'm a libertarian. So, but on this particular issue, you know, it's not that I'm against states' rights. It's not that I'm in favor of states' rights either. But I'm a pro-checks and balance type of guy. So if the states are doing something that is usurping the rights of the minority by using the majority against them or whatever, vice versa, mob rule or not, if it's dealing with the Constitution, then I guess in that aspect the federal government has a right to step in. But to in contrast, if the federal government's doing something right, I mean wrong, then the states have a right to nullify that of what's of what the federal government that is doing that's wrong. So the states have a right to nullify any federal law that is in violation of the U.S. Constitution and thenceforth. I mean, that's my interpretation of the whole thing. But like you know, you got to understand there's 1,000 different interpretations. So that's why we have courts. It's why we got to have people that are knowledgeable in this stuff. But, you know, I feel like the Supreme Court and a lot of the courts, they don't really make their interpretations based on what the Constitution says and how to set forth for guidance in the court systems. They, I feel, legislate from the bench, and that's at least how I feel about it. I, of course, you know, those that know me know that I'm big on getting people to elect libertarians that can institute such changes. Because believe it or not, if we can get 5 or 6 libertarians, or even 1 or 3, that'd be good to stopping or blocking a lot of hateful laws such as the Patriot Act, the NDAA, and what have you. If we can get a majority of libertarians elected, then we can implement a libertarian agenda. If we have the a libertarian in the presidency, we can enforce that agenda that is being persuaded by a libertarian majority in Congress if we had that, and we could then appoint judges and justices to the Supreme Court and what have you that can pave the way for additional victories for the libertarian, for not only the Libertarian Party, but for other political third parties, such as the Constitution Party, Independent Party, the Green Party. I don't know if there is an Independent Party, but you get my point. But now, you might be asking yourselves, well, you know, what's a libertarian, right? Well, if you don't know what a libertarian is, I mean, there's different sources that can lay that out for you. But in my perspective, a libertarian is someone who believes, you know, of course, there's different factions. That's something to understand, too. You have your anarchists or your anarcho-capitalists, if you will, who believe that there shouldn't be any government, that the government as a whole should be abolished on all levels, and that the individual is best to determine for themselves how they're going to properly govern. But I feel that, you know, and then you have the minarchists who would argue that there is a role for government, but that role should be limited to protecting and preserving individual rights. Now, first, the case of Social Security, my argument would be that I would much rather retain it, you know, the Social Security, and allow the free market to compete against Social Security. And then when the demand for the Social Security is diminished, then we can look towards privatizing it, or, you know, decentralizing it, or abolishing it, you know, at that point in time. But at least then we have then set forth the system, and my agenda is very clear on this. You know, those that know me also know that I believe that we should abolish every single federal government agency with the exception of Medicaid, Medicare, and CHIPS and Social Security, which I've inclined to say should be retained until, you know, we can build up a free market system and the demand for those programs are diminished and we can figure out what to do with them at that point in time, as I've said. But I feel like all the other federal government agencies, you know, with the exception of that, of course, we might want to keep ICE, but limit their powers, Customs, Border Patrol, whatever. But, or maybe we could abolish ICE at a later point in time, but, you know, or use them just primarily to deport anyone that's convicted of violent offenses, which, you know, is pretty much mostly going to be Americans. But if there's any, the oddballs here and there that are undocumented, that have, you know, impose danger, force, or fraud to others, they've been prosecuted, that's what they would be used for in that sense. If I hope I'm very clear on that. But I, other than that, I don't want to, you know, rock the boat and say, okay, we're going to infringe upon the rights of individuals, goods, and services to cross our borders. Because the main reason why we have borders is to say, look, this is the United States. So if you enter here, you're under the jurisdiction of the United States. This is Mexico. If you enter here, you're under the jurisdiction of Mexico, what have you. But I don't think the idea of borders should interfere with the crossing of people's individuals, goods, and services. So I don't think that anything that we do should interfere with that. We should have an open border policy that allows for people, goods, and services. Now, the idea of limited government and maximum freedom, right? And or no government, less taxes or no taxes, whatever. So, but it's the freedom party, I guess, if you will. But libertarianism, I'll give you the rundown on this. The Libertarian Party was founded by David Nolan in 1971. And that's really where the libertarian philosophy came into its own with the introduction of the Nolan chart and what have you. I think it was 1971 when the Libertarian Party was officially founded. And, of course, that's where we would have, that's when the Nolan chart was introduced, the perspective of what a libertarian is and what have you. But it predates the philosophy itself, which used to be referred to during the Revolutionary War and going forward as classical liberal. So being liberal at the time meant that it was the individual versus the state. So it was the right of people to decide for themselves what they choose to put in their own bodies, how they choose to raise their children, how they choose to relive their lives, so it's basically the right of all individuals and consenting adults, how they choose to raise their children, as long as they're not harming them. They have the right to raise their children however they see fit. They have the right to decide for themselves what they choose to put in their own bodies, including drugs, how they choose to raise their children, what they choose to spend their money on, and so on and so forth, as long as they don't impose danger, force, or fraud to others. So, and that's governed under the non-aggression principle as we now know it. But this was all known as liberalism. And this was prior to the progressives and the socialists and all that trying to take the term over, which they successfully did. And when you look at what a liberal is today, it's basically the opposite of that. It's basically, okay, we support freedom in personal matters, but only up to a certain point, and we don't really support economic freedom, which is in contrast to what a liberal used to be. So, you know, it's what we would call now libertarianism, and liberalism has evolved into its own totalitarian, authoritarian garbage, you know. And, of course, you know, the Socialist Caucus of the Libertarian Party, there's very few in between. I don't believe they have enough say to, you know, really get the Libertarian Party going in the right track, nor do I agree with their philosophy, or any socialist for that matter, in or outside the Libertarian Party. Now, and I just want to clarify this, there is a Socialist Caucus in the Libertarian Party, but it's very small, very limited. It doesn't have that much control over the party. I think the biggest and most organized caucus of the Libertarian Party at this point in time would be the Mises Caucus. And they're really big on decentralization, you know, states' rights, the right for states to secede from the Union. You know, and there is value in the Union for national defense, of course. You know, I would encourage you to check out that episode I did with Mike Tremat, which is also posted on YouTube. So, I guess it's no surprise that I think as of a week or two, I think it was about a week or two ago, yes, that I've joined the Libertarian Party Classical Liberal Caucus, because I looked at their platform and, you know, I don't see how it's any different from the Libertarian Party, its philosophy in terms of how it was under Nicholas Sarwark, and I really liked Gary Johns. I thought he was a good candidate. However, I don't think Bill Weld was the proper VP candidate, but side issue. should never have been elected by the delegates. So I'm not saying that the old guard is peachy con, but look, on everything or whatever, but I've joined because I seem to like the direction or the vision that they have for how they want to grow the Libertarian Party and have its sanity and all that, whatever, right? So as you know, as we know, I think, and I'm not saying everybody in the Mises Caucus is bad. I'm not saying that at all. There's a lot of people in the Mises Caucus that I like, I just didn't join the Mises Caucus because I don't feel, I'm not really that big. I mean, I'm more in the checks and balances than I am. Okay, let's give the states all this power that the federal government currently has that we know the states really aren't going to give to the people. And this was a process that was advocated for by, I think, Kim Roth before she stepped aside and resigned from running for the Libertarian Party before, and then Joe Jorgensen took the banner over for the nominations and was nominated at the convention, I think, when was that, 2020? Yeah. So 2022 was the National Libertarian Party convention at Reno, and that was when we had the so-called Mises Caucus takeover. The Mises Caucus, of course, was formed in 2017. Now, I'm not saying everybody in the Mises Caucus is bad. I'm not saying that at all. And so I think they've been heavily organized, and they know what they're doing, and they've gotten a lot of people involved in the Libertarian Party. My concern is we've done away with the part of the platform that says we condemn bigotry as irrational and repugnant. And I feel like with the Mises Caucus and the in control with its current leadership, which would be, I believe, is Angela Mercado and, you know, everyone else that's in the Libertarian National Committee, or the Libertarian National Committee, yeah, which governs the Libertarian Party at the national level. And so, I feel like they haven't gotten us the 50-state ballot access, or probably aren't going to. At least it's my concern with that, and that, you know, I feel like there's a lot of baggage that comes up and a lot of accusations. I'm not saying everybody in the Libertarian Mises Caucus is bad. Because, for example, I'm a huge fan of Ron Paul, and guess what? Ron Paul's part of the Mises Caucus, right? And so is Larry Sharp. Huge fan of Larry Sharp, but, you know, I'm also a big fan of the Libertarian Party of New York, and there's a lot of Mises members there. And, of course, Mosh Terej, I'm a big fan of. He's part of the Mises Caucus. And so there's a lot of people I get along with, a lot of people I'm buddy-buddy with that are part of the Mises Caucus, but I don't feel like it personally. With the messaging, it's good, but it's not, I haven't felt like I wanted to be part of the Mises Caucus. I haven't. And I was more impressed by the Classical Liberal Caucus than the Mises Caucus, at least from what I've seen from their platform, what they're promising to do, which is at least my take on it, which is to bring back the LGBTQ and abortion planks. I don't know if the abortion plank has any prayer in getting readmitted into the Libertarian platform. But I think the overall goal was with caution that the LPCLC, which I'm a member of, he wants to basically maintain and keep as much of the classically liberal libertarian ideology and philosophy intact. In other words, you know, making it so that it's not overly radical and to where we're getting a bunch of people in the party that are Republican light and therefore will then take over the Libertarian Party. That's at least my fear of it. And it's possible it can happen on any level within the Libertarian Party, but it hasn't happened to my knowledge. But I just like, I don't know. I don't want to go into the, I've never been a part of any caucus prior to joining the Libertarian, Classical Liberal Caucus. I've never been in any caucus prior to that because, you know, this whole time I felt, look, you know, what's the point in being part of a caucus? I don't need to be part of a caucus. I'm a libertarian. I can work across the aisle, whatever. But I feel like I can have a great impact in, you know, of course, I'm a libertarian straight on. I would never join the Socialist Caucus, never have, never will. Because I don't believe in the concept of, well, you know, rent is theft and this and that. But that's not what the Classical Liberal Caucus is saying either. That's just what the Socialist Caucus is saying. That's a separate caucus. But so there's at least three that I'm aware of, main ones. But the Mises, I mean, to give credit to where credit is due, I think the two main caucuses would be the Mises Caucus and the Classical Liberal Caucus. But, you know, honestly, the Mises Caucus has the keys in their hands. They're in control of the party. I'm more iffy on the states' rights and decentralization thing as far as that's concerned, in terms of giving the powers to the state governments. Because I see what the states are doing that are under either Democratic or Republican control. And so the platform, you know, is basically saying decentralize, that's what we're for. Give all the powers that are currently under the federal government to the state governments, but then the state government could then have too much power and use the majority, who may be Republican or Democrat, to go against libertarians and third parties. And this could, and having it, you know, so that there's no checks and balances, in my opinion. I mean, of course, I'm not saying that there shouldn't be a process for secession, but I think if you want to be part of the union, you should be, you should follow the rules of the U.S. Constitution. You know, now I'm not saying, you know, and of course, there isn't any real process for secession, at least at this point in time, but I'm not going to sit there and say, look, give them all this power, when we could privatize a lot of these agencies and abolish almost all these other agencies that we don't need. And then let the states, you know, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, that the states can't govern, but I don't want to create a situation where they have too much power. And I don't want the federal government to have too much power either, if that makes sense. And I feel like this decentralization of giving it all to the states kind of undermines the whole process of checks and balances. Now, I'm not saying not to create a process for states that don't want to be part of the union to secede. But what I am saying is that, you know, the states that are part of the U.S. federal government, right, should not be usurping the rights of everyone, you know, just because it isn't explicitly mentioned in the U.S. Constitution, or regardless of whether it's explicitly mentioned in the U.S. Constitution or not, in my personal opinion. Now, you know, if the states are going to say, let's legalize drugs, and the feds don't want to do that, well, I'm all in favor of the states legalizing drugs and, you know, protecting gun rights. But I'm not in favor of them banning guns or sitting there shoving, you know, anti-LGBTQ messages or rules down the throats of schools, when I feel like the schools, you know, should be handled by the free markets and by local school boards and by the parents who send their children to schools, if that makes any sense. I would much rather the free market work itself out instead of having every single Republican and or Democratic governor sit there and say, oh, we're going to impose all these rules onto. So in other words, you know, I feel like there's more of a promise with the classical liberal caucus in preserving the Libertarian Party and ensuring it stays within its classical liberal roots as libertarianism used to be and as it is now, not so much as it has become. But, you know, I think if you read the LP-CLC platform, you might come to a better understanding of that yourself. But in all, I feel like that's why I've joined, and I feel like, and I'm more than willing to help that caucus take over the party, regardless of whether I'm able, you know, that being the Libertarian Party, regardless of whether I'm able to attend in person to the Libertarian National Convention or not, and that just depends on if I have the money, the time, and what have you. But again, I'm not bashing anybody who is a Mises member or anything like that. You know, are there bad apples in the Mises caucus? Yeah. I'm sure every caucus in the Libertarian Party has good people, and I'm sure they all have bad apples. And I think we can, you know, I'm not, I don't want to sit there and bash one caucus over the other. Of course, I'd want to maintain respect and respectability in that sense. There's a lot of good that's come from the Mises caucus, but there's some concerns to have with it in terms of, you know, giving all the powers of the federal government to the state governments and then letting them kind of run the show against that of the minority. But, you know, that might just be me. But in a nutshell, right, that explains in terms of why I've personally decided to join the Classical Liberal Caucus of the Libertarian Party. And so, again, I'm not bashing the Mises Caucus. There's a lot of people I like in the Mises Caucus. Daniel Donnelly especially. Larry Sharp, Monch Turay, Tom Woods, and Ron Paul. It doesn't mean, you know, but, you know, but I think this should serve as, but there's a lot of people in the Classical Liberal Caucus I like too, that I feel have a better sense of direction in terms of where the Libertarian Party should be. And I think we can have just as much of an impact in growing the party and getting people as the Mises Caucus has. With that said, this is why I've decided to join the LPCLC, and I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you like, you know, any of my videos on YouTube, I encourage you to like, comment, and share. And I don't care what caucus you join, I just hope that we, as libertarians as a whole, can get even more people involved in the Libertarian Party. And, you know, so forth. And so, I'm Michael J. Long, of course, you know. And thank you for joining me. You know, of course, I've had the great honor in interviewing Mike Tremat. I like his platform in the sense it's very short and to the point. So it can, not that I agree with it in its entirety, but I explained to him, look, I like that it's short. I like that it's sellable to the people. But I feel like if you got a lot of different avenues with the different issues as an activist, then it's going to be much harder to create a shorter platform. But again, you know, and he's a great guy, you know. I mean, there's a lot of candidates that are being run on the Classical Liberal Caucus as well that are great. I mean, Mies Caucus has a lot of great candidates too, and, you know, whatever. So, you know, hopefully we can get to a point where we can restore respectability and maybe work together on areas where we agree to grow the Libertarian Party. So I'm Michael J. Long, and I'm, like I said, hopefully if we get into a position where we can get our members elected to the National Libertarian Party Committee maybe we can be in a predicament where we can, you know, work together on issues we agree with and continue to grow the membership as we've been. So, like I said, again, for the third time, I'm Michael J. Long. And yes, thank you for joining me. I truly appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you do, give it a like, thumbs up. And again, if you're on YouTube, please like, comment, share, subscribe. And if you subscribe, please click the notification bell, select all. And then that way, you'll be notified of any future video content and live streams that I do. And of course, my number one priority is not other than any caucus, whether I join. I mean, my number one priority out of anything, all right, is to grow the Libertarian Party, right? But to ensure that its platform and, you know, when the time comes, is respectable to its main true values of the non-aggression principles and, you know, whatnot. So, again, thank you for joining me, guys. I truly appreciate it. Thank you.